You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Friday to you. The playoff begins tonight. We're going to talk about that today. Also, we've got the depth chart for Arkansas's Liberty Bowl game against Texas Tech. Isaiah Satania has committed to Oklahoma. And we'll get into all of that today. Also, we'll talk a little bit about Razorback basketball. They will play North Carolina A&T this weekend over at Bud Walton Arena. And we'll finish our show with a Q&A with Coach Ken Hatfield at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. So a lot to get to today on our podcast. I'm joined here in studio by Ethan Westerman. We're both wearing green. Sydney, who's our resident Notre Dame fan, she thinks that we're here for Notre Dame.
Well, I might just be colorblind, but that
Well, it's kind of greenish-blue.
I'm calling that blue.
Greenish-blue, I think, would be the right word.
That's like coastal Carolina.
You're in very green.
I am very much my leprechaun green, which yeah. I guess that is me maybe being a little biased toward
Did you
Notre
see
Dame.
The tweet this morning from Notre Dame's football account? It just said, "Good morning from Notre Dame Stadium." And whoever the social media manager was, or I assume this is how this went, they made a snowman because it snowed overnight there, and they made a snowman outside of the football stadium, and I think they knew they were going to break the internet. People are really excited, number one, about the playoffs starting tonight, but also about the fact that you're going to have this game and probably the Penn State game with SMU tomorrow in the snow. You're going to have now Indiana, you know, they're just making a quick bus trip up to South Bend. But in the case of SMU going to Penn State and even Tennessee going to Ohio State, you've got some southern climate teams that are going into some really cold situations.
Yeah, and it makes for a fun television for sure. I'm not so sure. Maybe some fans are having a great time out there freezing, but it's going to be it's going to make for awesome television, I think.
How about College Game Day? I think they're going to be outside in South Bend this afternoon. They're doing two game day shows. They're doing one in South Bend, and then they're going to go over to Columbus in the morning for the Ohio State Tennessee game. There're going to be some shivering going on.
Oh yeah, for
on
sure.
Game day.
Yeah, I just love something that's new, and this is all just so
exciting.
New. It's just exciting that this is another chapter of we talk about how much. Right now is frustrating with college football. This is a good thing. The playoff expanding and how exciting this is.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I'm looking forward to seeing this. We'll talk a bit more about the playoff here in just a minute. But first, we got the depth chart for Arkansas's Liberty Bowl against Texas Tech, and needless to say, it looks a lot different than the depth chart for the Missouri game. We knew it was going to be this case. But it is kind of interesting to see what their thinking is in terms of who the players are who are going to be the expected starters. What jumped out at you as you looked at it?
What jumped out? It's almost
like
didn't jump out. Yeah. Yeah, it was literally trying to find what is remaining the same. That's how I kind of viewed this depth chart looking at it. I'll start with what stayed the same. Like Isaac Teslaw is in a starting receiver spot. That's something that started the last bit of the season. He's still there. Talen Green, you'll have him at quarterback still.
Mm-hmm. Carmona
will be there at left tackle. Amarian Harris is still here. So is Keyshawn Blackstock, although that is a little different because once Patrick Kutis came back, he kind of fell out of that line rotation. He's back at left guard now. Amarian Harris is at right tackle.
And that's it on offense.
That's about it on offense. People are familiar with Rodney Hill. He'll be taking the lead tailback spot. But yeah, that's new for him as well. I mean, you've had Jaquinn and Jackson and Braylon Russell and Rashad DeBinion all year. You don't have them now. Defense, there's a little bit more familiarity. I mean, you look at your nickel and your cornerback spot. Pretty much all your secondary from whenever they made those changes after the Ole Miss game, it looks very similar with you have Miguel Mitchell, Jaden Johnson, Hudson Clark, Danico Slaughter, Keon Stewart. You have all these guys that we've seen starting before. And then your linebacker core is honestly really good. Xavier Sorian, Stephen Dix there. But where it really gets interesting, which now we're going to really the changes, the defensive line is going to be very interesting this game because you don't have Landon Jackson. He opted out preparation for the NFL draft. I don't think anybody's blaming him there. Eric Gregory, sixth-year player, he opted out in preparation for the draft. He's you know, was your mainstay tackle. And then you had Nico Davier, who he committed out of the portal to UCLA. So, I mean, that's three of your starters on the D-line. So, it's a real shakeup there. Quincy Rhodes is going to start at defensive end. You still have Cam Ball at one of your tackle spots. But then you have Kivi Rose at the tackle spot and June Kaj at another defensive end. And then some of these young guys are going to get a chance. Charlie Collins and Kavion Henderson, two freshmen, they'll get some opportunity at defensive end. Going back on the offensive side, this is where, I mean, it gets really – it's looking different. Monte Harrison. Is going to be in a starting role. You're a 29-year-old freshman, former MLB player at a wide receiver spot. And that's just, you know – before the season, the question was, is he, like, just here kind of to practice? And now you're going into your bowl game, and he's going to be starting for you. So he definitely has made an impact this year. He's been on the two deep all year long. C.J. Brown, he's going to start at another receiver spot. You're going to have some other guys. Like, Shamar Easter is the backup for C.J. Brown at wide receiver. Shamar Easter was in the tight end room. He has been in the tight end room for 2 years now, so... they've turned him into a receiver for the bowl game. Andreas Pushka, he's your starting tight end with Maddox Lassiter behind him, which, you know, you don't have Luke Haas there anymore, nor do you have two guys that you started the year with Ty Washington and Varkeys Gums. It's just, you put this next to the first depth chart of the year, and it is...
Where did everybody go?
Where did people come from? Because these are names that you've never seen on the depth chart. I mean, most of the time, you know, I will take one depth chart and I'll use one depth chart and write out next to it using that template, you know, the next depth chart. I had to just start from scratch on this one because it's just that much different. On the line, you're going to have Kobe Branham starting at right guard, which they're really high on him. And then Brooks Edmondson at center, who he just was granted a scholarship. He was put on scholarship. So two new guys on the line. It's just, yeah, it's have fun this bowl game. If you have not been in the sicko mode of this roster all year where you just know everybody's names, you're gonna be like, who is that, it's gonna be all game asking who is that.
I was thinking about Branham, like listening to them talk about him, it reminds me a little bit of what they were saying about Kudus going into the last Liberty Bowl couple of years ago, or about Marion Harris, that they liked how he played, or, you know, obviously he had to be ready for that game. So you know, just like you said, they think that the ceiling is high there for Kobe Branham. Don't know if this is an oversight or what's going on there, but Tyrone Broden is not listed on the roster or the depth chart for the Liberty Bowl.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that before we moved on, is that you don't have two receivers that I think we kind of expected. You know, they've been quiet about Broden. Like, we've been asking, like, who's going to be there as receiver without Armstrong and Satania, and Broden's name never came up, which was kind of like, what's going on there? But there was never anything like he's definitely going to not play. He's not on the roster on these game notes. And then Jordan Anthony's another guy that I thought that one's the more surprising one because, you know, he's kind of in line to where I would have thought he'd be in maybe a starting receiver spot for this game. He was not on the two deep. He is on the roster in the game notes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it seems like he's still with the program. I don't get those vibes with Tyrone Broden. But, yeah, you don't have those two receivers for this game.
Team arrives in Memphis on Monday. Ethan's going to be over there when they get there. And we'll learn some more on Monday, I would suppose, about the status of these players. Moving on, transfer portal. Yesterday probably one of the quieter days that we've had from a portal perspective. Mentioned on the show yesterday the two new gets, and I have to correct myself. I said Caden Kittler was a guard. He's a center that has committed to Arkansas from UCF. And then Robinson from Georgia Tech also committed as a tackle. One of the really good prospects, it looks like. I mean, what's the number two on 3.com's number two tackle prospect?
Yeah, and I was doing a deep dive on him just after he committed, just to kind of check out that commitment. And he had the top pass blocking grade among all ACC players this year by Pro Football Focus, which that's impressive to me. And it was the fourth best pass blocking grade, and I'm not talking just tackles. I'm talking all players, period. He had the fourth best pass blocking grade among all players who appeared in at least 12 games this year, so everybody who played their whole season. So, I mean, that's a big get for them, it seems like. You know, it's funny because you saw Taylen Green post, like, a GIF or something of, like, just a guy, like, celebrating in the car.
Is it a GIF or a GIF?
I'm not even going to offend.
I think it's a GIF.
I'm going to call it a GIF.
Okay. Continue.
You go like giraffe. That's how you view it. Right. I view it as...
Well, like Jif peanut butter. Or is it Jiffy?
I liked my comparison better because it's Jiffy. Giraffe starts with a G. Jiffy starts with a J. Anyway, I don't know. I always do this with you where we start talking about random things. But
you ever think it might be on purpose?
You do that. You can throw out rabbits for me to chase, and I chase them.
Go ahead.
Anyway, what was I even?
You're talking about. Yeah. You're talking about
Taylen
a Jeff.
Green posted one, a super excited one about the two, these two guys coming in, and I think it's because, I think the reason he's so excited about it is, these two are both highly rated in pass blocking, which Taylen Green this year. Let's be real. He did some of his own. He was his own worst enemy sometimes with taking huge sacks and running all around for his life. But there's a reason a lot of times he ran for his life. And I think that he's excited that there's two really good pass blockers coming in. We'll see how that affects, if they can run block equally as well, if that affects how Arkansas is able to stay balanced. But it seems like just from me looking at how they grade in Pro Football Focus and stuff like that, it seems like they're really trying to get a good line for pass protection. Like, they really want to keep passing the ball.
And Isaiah Satania commits to Oklahoma last night. I'm not going to say I was surprised or anything. I mean, Isaiah, obviously, he was a big-time prospect out of high school, just didn't reach his ceiling here at Arkansas. Or maybe he did, but the point being that, you know, you get that kind of speed. And I've always thought Isaiah had pretty good hands. That's going to be attractive to a big program like OU.
Yeah, and I think that for him, it was kind of an out of – it didn't surprise me where he landed, but I think that I was just thinking so much that he'd end up at A&M or, like, I don't know. There was – I didn't think he'd end up at Oregon, but I know that there was a lot of interest there in high school.
We committed to him in high school.
He did, okay. I knew that there was –
He was committed to Oregon, and he was committed to A&M and then signed with Arkansas.
So gotcha.
OU is the fourth school that he's committed to.
Yeah, well, and I'm – yeah, I'm just going to be interested to see how that plays out there at Oklahoma. Who's the – they just got – or they're rolling with who had been
– Are they staying with JoJohn Finley?
Yeah, I think they're staying with the guy who kind of took over for Jackson Arnold.
Oh, you're talking about at quarterback.
At quarterback, yeah, because I'm just interested to see how that develops.
I don't know
there.
How that's going to work out.
Yeah.
Because Arnold – they took over for him, and then I think Arnold got the starting job back by the end of the year. So, was it Michael Washington? Was that it? Was that his name? I can't remember.
Think. I'm not sure. All I know is Isaiah Satania goes into it just feels like a very unknown situation for me over there at Oklahoma. Oklahoma's in, like, a very much of a, you know, next year's big for them, I feel like.
Huge. Hawkins is
they got to figure out life in the SEC next year, like, or else that's a fan base that I just – They value winning too much that I if they don't figure it out next year. And it's just interesting to me that Satania is going to be a part of that equation. They're trying to, you know, get competitive in the SEC because this year just was – they had the what you'd expect SEC wake-up call, I think.
Arkansas won't see OU next year, at least not in the regular season. I guess there's always that threat they could play in Atlanta. But they won't see him in the regular season next year. If Isaiah were to stay there for more than a year – they would most likely see OU on their schedule in 2026. I want to tell you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com. We think it's the most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. I want to tell you, too, you can find our podcast on Apple or Spotify by searching Whole Hog Sports. You can find a video version on our YouTube page, search Whole Hog Sports, or you can find it on our social media pages, and you guessed it. You can search Whole Hog Sports there to find that. Playoff starting tonight, Notre Dame hosting Indiana. You got the games tomorrow. SMU goes to Penn State. You got Clemson at Texas, and you've got Ohio State hosting Tennessee in the nightcap tomorrow. like we said earlier, this is exciting. I'm very excited about the start of the playoffs. Starting with this game tonight, not only are they in the snow, but you know you've kind of got that. I mean, not kind of. They are in-state opponents, even though Indiana and Notre Dame don't play all that often. Indiana's a great story this year. You know, Notre Dame, obviously a well-known brand. This is an interesting game tonight.
Yeah, I'd agree. And these are two teams that I think they're both improve me mode. Like, just what have they really proven this year?
Yeah.
And so I'm just interested to see how this goes. Indiana's that feel-good story this year. Coaches Kurt Cignetti, did I say his name right?
Cignetti, yeah.
Cignetti. And
the
he's
Sig.
The Sig. And, I mean, what he's done, is this his first year there too?
Yeah, well, I mean, what he'd been at James Madison.
Yeah.
And then he brought like half of his James Madison team with him to Bloomington. And, you know, it's really not a whole lot different, I think, than what Calipari's done in basketball here at Arkansas, where, you know, you take all these guys who either played for you or committed to you, and you just move the headquarters to a new city.
Yeah, and it's astonishing what he's been able to accomplish this year. And, you know, this is something I think about, too, with him, because where I was going with that is James Madison, they were one of those teams with him. I think that they got up and they played with a lot of group of the power conference teams whenever they went up against them, which lets me know that he's a guy that, you know, I think people are kind of viewing Indiana in this game as a dog just because, you know, you got the brand name of Notre Dame and stuff. And I just think that he's the type that could get a team. He comes from that background where you get a team up for a game against a team that maybe you aren't favored against. Especially, you know, being in state, there's all the, you know, bulletin board stuff in the world you can use as far as like you're viewed in the shadow of this program at Notre Dame. Are we picking it right now?
If you want to pick, go ahead. I'm not doing predictions, but by all means.
Okay. Well, okay.
What you got?
Well, I think I'm going to...
We don't even have our prediction music going.
I think I'm going to pick Notre Dame still, but I really think this is going to be close. And I view this whole first weekend, I think there's going to be at least one dog that gets it done.
I do too.
And I really think Indiana could be the one, but I just don't have the gall to pick them right now. But they have I think they have the number one rush defense in the nation. And I just think of a snow game... you have the number one run defense, and I think Notre Dame's predicated on their run offense, so it's really strength on strength. But I look at it and I wonder what.
You ever see that meme on social media where Arthur's fist is like shaking? That's what Sydney's doing at you right now.
Oh, gotcha. Is she? Is she a Notre Dame?
Well, she's wearing a Notre Dame jersey today.
Okay.
So
I
don't think it's a fake Notre Dame fandom.
I was. In a hurry on my way in here, and I did not see
Sydney, how
long
have you worked for us? You've been here for about 2 months now, right? And out of those 2 months, how many days have we not talked about Notre Dame? Zero.
Gotcha.
So there you go.
Well, I picked them. I picked them. I said I don't have the gall to pick Indiana. I just think that Indiana, the run defense that they have against the strength of Notre Dame running the ball, it's going to be big to watch tonight, especially, you know, in the snow, where you see teams really lean on the run a lot of times. This is going to be a fun game, I think.
Notre Dame's a 6.5-point favorite. And if you want a local connection for this game at Indiana, Caden Turner, who played for Fayetteville High School, he's a linebacker in Indiana. Now, he didn't play very often. He hadn't played since the Nebraska game in October. But there is a local angle there for that game.
And that's interesting with him because, you know, he was there before Cignetti got there. So he's a guy who he's probably like, oh, I'm glad I stayed. You know,
I would say so.
You're reaping now... you know, being a part of a college football playoff team.
All right, tomorrow, and we think this game might be in the snow too, up at Happy Valley, SMU at Penn State. Both of these teams are 11-2. Penn State's an 8.5-point favorite for the game. I like the SMU. I mean, you talk about local angles. You got Rhett Lashley, who grew up here in Springdale. He was a GA at Arkansas, was a quarterback for the Razorbacks. That's about as local as you can get. I like the story of SMU about the way they bought their way into a conference and they're sacrificing TV revenue for 9 years. But I just, even with Penn State's problems in big games under Franklin, I feel like this is a tough uphill battle for SMU tomorrow.
Yeah.
They haven't beaten a ranked team this year.
Yeah, and I think Penn State's going to beat them pretty thoroughly. I hate to say that because I like the SMU story too, but I just think Penn State, the most interesting thing in this game, I think, is going to be Penn State's D-line how the SMU O-line can hold up against it. And I think here's the thing. I think if they're disruptive early and in front of that home crowd in Penn State can score with anybody. And, I mean, they're going to be able to put up points on them to where it's if that defense is disruptive and causing SMU headaches early, I think it could really snowball quick. This is a Penn State team that I think gets up for this game and wins.
Now, I'm working on a commentary right now about Lashley, and I'll just workshop it here. Basically that there's probably not another school in America that has had more former players go on to have success as college coaches as Arkansas. I mean, you could put their resume up against anybody. You had Barry Switzer win 3 national championships at OU. He won a Super Bowl with the Cowboys. Jimmy Johnson won a national championship at Miami. He won a Super Bowl with the Cowboys. Gus Malzahn played for a national championship at Auburn. I think Auburn fans will look back one day and say, you know what, that wasn't so bad. That wasn't as bad as we thought it was in the moment. I thought he had a really good run there at Auburn. Butch Davis was at Miami, and they probably should have played for a national championship in 2000, but the BCS computer screwed him out of an opportunity to do so. Ken Hatfield, Fred Akers. There are so many coaches at Arkansas who have had success, be it at a national level or even just a conference level. And Lashley, he gets to take his, he gets to step up on the stage tomorrow, and we'll see how it goes. But I think it's going to be a pretty uphill battle for Penn State. If you really want to get sick, there's a couple of really great FCS games tomorrow: South Dakota State, North Dakota State, which is
that's what dreams are made
it's
of.
That levels Alabama, LSU.
That's Bison Jackrabbits, right?
Yes, Bison and the Jackrabbits.
Just phenomenal.
And then you've got South Dakota and Montana State, the top 4 teams in the FCS are all standing.
Bobcats. You said South. Coyotes and
the Coyotes. Coyotes or Coyotes?
I'm gonna call them the Coyotes. Coyotes and Bobcats, I think.
You know, I have read stories, and they're not playing each other tomorrow, but they could play each other in the national championship game in Frisco. That when South Dakota and South Dakota State played in basketball, that the students would bring a carcass of the other team's mascot to the games, and they would freeze it, and then they would throw it on the floor. And somebody got hit in the head by a jackrabbit or a coyote, I can't remember which, and got seriously injured, and that ended that practice.
Well, I was about to say, these are things that fly in Vermilion, South Dakota until somebody puts an end to it, I guess. But I just love – I mean, I've said it before, and I love the FCS playoffs. I remember June Kaj last year. I was watching the semifinals with June Kaj in there, and Reese Poffenbarger, who was the former Arkansas women's player,
brother
who he just committed to North Texas out of the portal.
Taking Chandler Morris's spot.
Yeah, but there's a lot of these FCS playoffs. You watch these later games and you see guys that are going to be playing in like for legit power conference teams next year.
By the way, that Notre Dame game's on ABC. 2 of these games, SMU, Penn State, and then Clemson and Texas, they're going to be on TNT.
I'm here for it.
And streaming on Max.
I'm very interested just to see what that whole production even looks like.
Well, it's going to be an ESPN production. What they've done is they've subleased. ESPN is going to handle the production, so it's going to be ESPN announcers, ESPN producers, directors, everything. It's just going to air on TNT.
Even ESPN graphics?
Probably. Wow. Wouldn't surprise me. That would be the one that I would be interested to see. But Clemson and Texas, 3 o'clock. Texas is a 12-point favorite.
This kind of goes hand-in-hand with why I just picked Penn State, too, is I just – or why I'm picking Texas in this one. I don't buy the legitimacy of the ACC this year at all.
I'd agree with that.
I just don't know what they've done. The most impressive thing they've done to me all year, unless I'm just forgetting something, is the fact that Georgia Tech took Georgia to that many overtimes. That was impressive. Mm. But, like, other than that, I mean, Georgia thumped this Clemson team. I know it was week 1 and a lot changes over the course of the season, but they beat them. South Carolina beat them.
Yeah. They haven't beaten an SEC team this year.
I mean, you just look top to bottom, and the ACC has not done much to move the needle for me this year. I mean, you got your team that was picked to – I think was Florida State picked to win it?
Yes.
And they are one of the worst teams of the in college football this year. I mean, it's just – yeah, they haven't proven much to me. I think Texas, especially at home I really hate this color matchup. I'm just going to put that one out there. This is just – shade of orange versus shade of orange, and it's not appealing to me at all. But I'll pick the burnt orange over this. I don't know what do I call this shade of Clemson orange? This is just orange.
Prison orange.
Okay. Texas, traffic cone orange.
Yeah, Texas is. I think Clemson could cover the 12-point spread, but I think Texas wins. And then finally, Tennessee at Ohio State. This might be where you see your upset. You know, like where you talk about, and I don't know if it's much of an upset because you got an 8-9 game here, but Ohio State's a 7.5-point favorite. This one is really interesting to me because if Tennessee plays to its level of capability, I think they can go in there and beat Ohio State. Michigan just did it 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, however long that was. I think Tennessee can, but I also think that for Ohio State, it's been 3 weeks of, you know, challenging your manhood, you know, listen to what happened about the Michigan game. And so we'll see. But they also have the home field advantage.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion, which maybe you can add more to this than I do. All I know is I've seen people, it's a hot button topic about just the fans, like Ohio State preventing Tennessee fans from being able to get in there with how they're handling the ticket situation.
I'm not sure. I haven't read about that.
All I know is Tennessee fans are like determined to take over at least a little part of the stadium, which we know from the Arkansas game this year, they travel.
I have never seen more visiting fans than I saw for the Tennessee-Arkansas
game
this year.
They really travel, and they are determined to get inside the horseshoe and make this a good Tennessee crowd. But Ohio State, something with the ticket situation is making that very, very difficult.
Yeah, I don't know much about that. I do know this, that I was listening to Ross Bjork, who's Ohio State's AD, talk a couple of weeks ago, maybe this was last week, on a radio interview that he did somewhere, and he said that Tennessee's going to get to run out with an entrance video, which you never see that, and that the college football playoff is sending its own audiovisual people in to run the music and the video boards there at the stadium. So, therefore, the home field advantage in the playoff is more akin to like an NCAA baseball regional where they come in and they won't let you do all your normal – they won't even let you have the RBI girls. Like, what's wrong with the people? They won't even let the RBI girls go out there and perform like they've done all year at a Razorback baseball game. And so it's going to be a lot more like the NCAA baseball regional than it's going to be like an NFL playoff game where you go into Pittsburgh and, you know, they're playing their music, they're doing their things – it's not going to be quite like this.
And that's
for the
exactly how it is.
Playing
for
Renegade, that's what I was going to say.
NCAA women's basketball tournament, they play at the host sites. Like the top 16 seeds get to host.
The NCAA and they, runs everything.
I was
saying
they those like I mean it's your home court advantage. You have your crowd and stuff, but it's like they do the stuff where you can have like the hype video for the other team is playing.
The hype video for the NCAA too. That's,
yeah,
those are bad.
Yeah, but it's gonna have that very NCAA.
And keep in mind, the college football playoff is totally separate from the NCAA, but they are using, I think, some of the NCAA practices for the postseason. Ohio State, is that who you've got?
This one's tough for me to pick. I'm picking Ohio State, though.
I'm going
to
go with Tennessee. I don't know if they can win it, but I think they got a good chance.
You know, we talk about, I think a dog's going to win this weekend.
Smokey?
Not this dog. Not this Tennessee dog. It's almost like a duh. Those are the closest seeded matches. But I think it's going to be one of either Tennessee over Ohio State or Indiana over Notre Dame.
I'm going to go with Tennessee.
Right, I really want to pick Indiana. I'm not going to do it, though, and I'm going to pick Ohio State in this one. I just think Tennessee's kind of in a prove-me-something state with me as well. But the best thing they've done this year was the Alabama win, and that doesn't carry a ton of weight to me because Alabama wasn't your normal Alabama.
But they could have been in the playoff. They were this close to being in the playoff.
If they had been in the playoff, I mean, I would have wanted to rant because that would have been so messed up. But I will. I don't want to speak in theoreticals of the past.
All right. When we come back, Anthony Christensen's going to join me. We'll talk Razorback basketball. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, We are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Razorback basketball, they get back on the court tomorrow at Bud Walton Arena. It'll be a 1:30 tip-off against North Carolina A&T. This game will be on SEC Network. In fact, there are no more streamed Razorback basketball games this year. Everything's going to be on linear television from this point forward. Anthony Christensen's with me. He covers Razorback basketball for us. Anthony, this feels like one of those games where Arkansas, unless something goes very, very wrong, that they should, you know, win this pretty handily.
Yes.
any other care to elaborate?
Yeah, I mean, it's a North Carolina A&T team that's coming in kind of on in a bit of a tough stretch. I believe they've lost 7 or 8 consecutive games. I don't remember exactly how many off the top of my head. 314 in KenPom. So another, you know, sub 250, 300 team that they're going to be playing against. I mean, they're not going to be Maryland Eastern Shore, that level of why are we here? But I mean, there's some good players on this team. Obviously, Landon Glasper is the one who stands out. The Fayetteville kid getting to come home, play a game at Bud Walton Arena. So I'm sure he's real excited about that. Ryan Forrest as well, another Arkansas kid from Marion. He gets to, you know, come to his home state and play. And those two combine for about 55% of their shots. So those are going to be the go-to guys. So I'm sure they're maybe going to have a little extra motivation to play well, just playing back at home in front of family and friends and everything. So I'm sure they're excited about that. But a team that's struggled a little bit. I mean, they've got 2 wins over some D1 teams, but both sub 350 or around the 350 range in KenPom and Morgan State and the Citadel. But you know, there's some potential there, I think. They've kind of struggled on the defensive end. They've kind of struggled to keep teams, you know, from getting, I guess, you know, hot from inside. Their three-point defense has actually been pretty decent. But when teams get inside, I mean, they draw a lot of fouls. So that's kind of where A&T has struggled for the most part.
I said this last week, and then Adu Thiro had the flu and didn't play. I think, you know, so I mean, I feel like a broken record, but I think that finally tomorrow we're going to see this group, you know, this core group of 9 players healthy and able to play together. And I'm excited about that aspect, seeing just how they're going to look when, you know, I mean, knock on wood, nobody's sick, nobody's turned an ankle, nobody's had surgery, nobody's, you know, whatever the case has been with them that's kept people out, that there's going to be this core group of players together, and we're finally going to get a look, I hope, tomorrow and against Oakland heading into the Tennessee SEC opener of how these guys look together. Because I think there's a lot of promise and potential with this team if they can ever get everybody on the court together.
Yeah, and I think the big question mark, I mean, assuming that Adu Thiro and I think Billy Richmond as well have gotten over the flu, is whether or how much, you know, Zvonimir Ivicic is going to play, because he was dealing with that ankle issue against Miami and UTSA, and then Michigan. And also
UCA.
Yeah, UCA.
No. That's their four-game win
fuzzy.
Streak.
I'm fuzzy right now. but, yeah, so that'll be interesting. Obviously, you want to see them build that cohesion, which you've kind of started to see a little bit, I think. Especially in that second half against Michigan. I mean, I thought that was the best they've looked this season. And then they've just never really looked back against UCA. But to get all those guys healthy and together, you know, playing, you know, with that kind of core 9-man rotation, I think it's obviously going to be key going into, you know, the gauntlet that is the SEC.
Is it Chuck Martin's son is on the North Carolina A&T roster?
It's Chuck Martin. Let me look at the email real quick. Yes. Yep.
Okay,
yep, Jordan. So that'll be
kind
of
an interesting
little
story there.
That'll be a fun little thing, I'm sure, for both of them to, you know, compete against each other, some family bragging rights and everything. But I'm sure it'll be nice to just see each other. Obviously, I mean, one's in Fayetteville, Arkansas, the other's in North Carolina, So it'll be nice for those guys, I'm sure.
Is A&T, is that, that's not Fayetteville, North Carolina, right?
No, it's Greensboro.
Okay.
So I'm not all that familiar on my North Carolina geography, but I don't know if those are close to each other. But one of the things about SEC Media Day, Mike White asked me where I was from, the Georgia coach, and I said Fayetteville. He's like, Fayetteville, North Carolina? I was like, no, Fayetteville, Arkansas. Or where I live.
Okay. I think
which, yeah.
There's a Fayetteville, Georgia, too, I think.
That, is there?
That some people, I think.
Okay.
I think there is.
I'm Googling this.
While you're Googling, you talked to Tyler Euless earlier this week for a story that you had on our website about Boogie Fland and how close he's coming to a triple-double. Share some of the insights that you had from talking with him.
Yeah, Tyler likes him a lot. He's very coachable, and Fayetteville is a city in Georgia as well.
That's what I thought.
Now we've learned.
Fayetteville, Arkansas, North Carolina, and Georgia seem to be the big three
that
people will ask you about.
That's the LeBron, Wade, and Bosh of Fayetteville's.
It's not like Waldron. You know, you tell somebody you're from Waldron, there are other Waldrons, but continue.
But no, I mean, he's enjoyed working with him. Obviously, Tyler Euless is a guy who's played for Calipari. Kind of been in that same mold, maybe not to the same, I guess, prospect rating as somebody like Boogie Fland, but a guy who played for Calipari and then made it to the NBA. Tyler Euless also got close to a triple-double once under Calipari. I believe he had 17-10-8 against Auburn in 2017, I want to say. He got close. He didn't realize he had gotten that close before I had told him, which was kind of funny. But he really enjoys working with Boogie. Obviously, those two work together a lot obviously Tyler is a point guard who's played for Calipari, so he knows kind of the nuances and everything that kind of go into that. He said he's very coachable. He also thinks he can do it. And I think the thing that really stuck out to me the most is that he was saying, Boogie's realizing that it's a lot more fun to get, 16-10-10 than it is to get 25-5-7 or something like that.
You can never predict a triple double. That's like going to a baseball park and saying this guy's going to hit for the cycle today. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the trend that Boogie has been on for the last few games, you look at the type of opponent they're playing tomorrow. I mean, this is one of the reasons that I pitched this idea to you earlier in the week was like, it feels like, and with Calipari pushing him and saying, I want to see you get a triple-double, this feels like the type of game where you could see it. Like, Courtney Fortson had the last one for Arkansas probably 14, 15 years ago, and it was against North Carolina Central. Alvin Robertson had the only other one in program history, and it was against a good Texas team. But usually when you see these types of stat lines, it's in these types of games like what we're going to see tomorrow.
Yeah, no, so, I mean, it could be It could be that game, right? He's got a good opportunity to do it against a North Carolina A&T team that has kind of struggled, on both sides of the rebounding aspect of things. If that makes sense. He could get it there. He could also, obviously, always is going to rack up the assists.
The steals and it's hard to get 10 steals in a game, but he had five in the last one.
He did have five in the last one. I think he's gotten six or seven as well in one game. So there is that. He could do it. Against an A&T team that, if I remember correctly, doesn't necessarily take care of the ball super well. They do kind of keep the ball well. That's my mistake, but he could do it. I mean, he's a very good on ball defender, and obviously gets a lot of steals, gets some interceptions in there as well. But I mean, it's a team that doesn't really rebound all that well, and he could get those. Obviously, he can easily get close to that in assists, and then obviously he's only scored fewer than 10 points once this season, I think. So he could do it. I'm not going to sit here and say he will, but he could.
And the team, when the game is over tomorrow, they all go home. They're going to be, they may be on a flight home by tomorrow night, for all we know, and they don't have to be back in Fayetteville until the afternoon of the 26th after the game tomorrow. They don't play again until December 30th against Oakland, a game that obviously will have some interest because of the fact that Oakland beat Kentucky in the NCAA tournament in John Calipari's last game with the Wildcats earlier this year. Anthony, appreciate you being here. When we come back, we're going to replay our interview with Ken Hatfield from yesterday's Hogs Illustrated Sports Club, our Q&A with the former Razorback football coach. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends from Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. Come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Like we mentioned a moment ago, Ken Hatfield was our featured speaker at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club in Springdale. Yesterday, Coach Hatfield obviously spent six seasons as Arkansas's head coach, also won conference titles at Clemson and at Rice, coached at the Air Force Academy before he came to Arkansas. Great Razorback football player, was on the Hogs' 1964 national championship team, had one of the great plays in program history, his 81-yard punt return to help beat Texas during that championship season when the Longhorns were ranked number one in Austin. We're going to play for you now our Q&A with Coach Hatfield, and here it is from the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club.
These are your sunglasses?
I knew. They're
so, mine now.
Yeah, there you go. Finders keepers, right? Hey, for all the students here, I just want to say, first off, thanks for being here. I just want you to know how cool of a deal this is as you get to hear Coach Hatfield today. This is a great coach, but a great man, too. And so I'm glad that you all are here today. A lot of championship-level coaches in here. You got Coach Jorn over here, I saw, former Razorback baseball pitching coach. Brad Dunn back there. You got your championship ring on today, Brad? Yeah, you do. I've never seen you without it on. So, Coach, I want to talk to you about just the state of college football right now. You know, you hear all the coaches, it feels like every coach, just sounding the alarm, saying what's going on right now is not sustainable. I wonder what your thoughts are as you see everything from – transfer portal, NIL, on down the list.
Well, I don't like what I see. The one thing that seems to be missing is some leadership in college athletics, period. Mm-hmm. And I think the NCAA has missed a chance to make a difference because they're the group that could do it. And I think they're afraid of a lawsuit, and I'm afraid they don't think they want to go through the courts again. And so they're trying to let someone else take the leadership, and there is nobody right now taking the leadership of what is good for the student athlete. The one thing that is good, I've always felt that a lot of the money and the TV money should be divided with the athletes, but it should be equitable for all the athletes and not just one particular person. But right now, we're even more professional than the pros are and have no guidelines, no parameters and everything, and it's not a good system. I think it's just a matter of time before the courts get involved with it to make it happen. I think you're going to find out Title IX, the Olympic sports, when people start taking money from those, it's going to make a difference, and I think the courts will step in. But someone has to provide the leadership, and I'll be honest with you, I don't see it right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. You see coaches right now, you know, they're preparing for a bowl game, or some of them are preparing for playoffs, and they got players leaving their teams because – if they don't get in the transfer portal right now, they're not going to have an opportunity for four or five more months. If you're in a locker room right now, or if you're trying to manage a locker room right now, how difficult do you think it is?
Well, that's why I'm not coaching. That's why Saban's not coaching today either. Right now. I don't think they want to handle the problem the way you have right now until it gets where it should be. And it's a very difficult thing because you can imagine as a coach trying to have the cohesiveness that all you guys have as a team because you function together as one unit all the time. And last time I looked, y'all all getting paid the same, aren't you? Got a free meal. Did all of you get a free meal? Yeah, yes, you did. So anyway, it's going to be a very difficult situation. Be hard to and it's hardest thing as a team because you're going to have a good number of your players will elect not to play in the bowl game, which isn't fair to the bowl, isn't fair to your teammates, but it's the way it is, and it's not going to be a good thing.
Do you think it lowers the level of coach? I mean, because like we've seen, you mentioned Coach Saban's not coaching anymore. I think Mike Krzyzewski said this is one of the reasons that he stepped away from basketball. Roy Williams, too. I know there are going to be more coaches who are going to be able to step up and fill that void, obviously, but the level of coach, do you think it diminishes because of all this, that it's going to push some people out?
I think that there are people there that find that their calling as coaching will still be coaching, and they'll do whatever it takes. And it's just a matter of being fair to the whole system of the intercollegiate athletics. And the things that a lot of people are going to miss are about how to be a second teamer and how to learn to work through problems to stay where you are. Instead, people are so quick to go somewhere else, they think they can play quicker. And they're going to miss a lot of their life that's going to make a difference in their life later on because they're just going to chase the money and go where you are. And I think it's going to be detrimental in the end.
There are people who compare this time to the Southwest Conference 40 years ago, 45 years ago. You coached in the Southwest Conference. I mean, is it comparable to what was happening then from just a recruiting and money standpoint?
Only for certain programs. it wasn't exactly as wide open in the papers every day as maybe it was. Mm-hmm. But I don't think really in those days there were very many that went to a school for the financial ability. And that the team, the lessons, the coaches, the school, your alumni, what was going to happen later on were important in that decision that you had. And right now I'm not sure how much those things are important to young men.
I wonder from an athlete standpoint, when you have players who are – I was reading a story the other day about a guy who I think says it's fourth school in 5 years or something. Mm-hmm. It feels like they're missing something, right? Like there's something that they're missing that they're never going to be able to have that people of your generation or the players that you coached, mm-hmm. they've got that.
I think that's true. I think everybody, you can talk to most any athlete here, and you find at a point they had to decide to either do what the coach said and stay with it or quit. And most all of these are people are examples of those who stayed with it, who worked through their problems, who improved however the coach told them to do. And this is the example, and this is what you end up. How you're going to end up with a team full of people like that now is going to be a mystery to me.
I want to ask you about the college football playoff because you spent a few years on the selection committee.
Yep.
When you were there, you were picking four teams. Now it's 12 teams.
Right.
How much do you think – does it change any? Does the selection committee's role other than picking eight new teams, or do you think that maybe it's a different kind of process now than when you were there?
I think it's a much different process. It's similar. The only thing that I had in being on the committee, we had about six athletic directors on there as well as some coaches and some journalists, and I think that you got a smattering of viewpoints, which was really good. Some people liked I always looked to see who had the best offensive and defensive lines. Someone else always counted who had the most explosive plays. And then other people, everybody had something unique about them that they'd evaluated. The wonderful thing about the CFP committee for me, we had access of video of every football game played every week. So you could pick any team and watch whoever you wanted as long as you wanted to. That was the fun part, to give a fair evaluation. And in our day, the biggest problem was trying to pick the teams that were like 10 through 15 or 16. Usually you can find that the one, two, or three, they usually stick out. Mm-hmm. But all those others, it meant so much to them to be able to go to a bowl game. And so that's why it was always trying to be fair to take the right team and give them an opportunity to go to bowl. We know what an experience would be to them. So I think everybody took it very extremely seriously all the time, and it was fun being on, to be honest with you.
Take people kind of inside what those weekends look like whenever you're meeting with the other members of the selection committee. So you meet at the Gaylord Texan Hotel down in Grapevine.
Right.
Take us from there on what those 2 or 3 days look like.
Well, we ate a lot. And
I've got good food there.
The number one thing, you had to add bacon at every meal right there. That was a bad thing about it, too, when you'd be in a meeting room, and if you were talking about your team, like Joe Castigliano at Oklahoma, we'd talk about them. Well, you had to excuse yourself. Mm-hmm. But he liked getting excused all the time because he'd go out and he'd eat all the dadgum bacon right here. And said, Joe, that's not fair. Let some other guy get excused every now and then. But it was a fun affair. They took good care of you. The main thing they did is that we got back and we made all our decisions. And then after we thought about it, we got up the next morning before we went home and went over everything one last time. And there were a lot of changes sometime on Sunday morning of what we'd thought about the night before that somebody had brought up. And we tried to do our best, really.
When Hunter Yurecek was here a few months ago, he said that he had more recusals than anybody in the history of the sport because he couldn't talk about Arkansas, couldn't talk about South Carolina because he had a son there, and he couldn't talk about SMU because he had a son there.
Well, I was on the committee.
Well, then talk about the rest of the teams. Was it just Arkansas for you, or was it Clemson and Air Force and any of the teams that you coached that you had to recuse yourself from the conversation?
We didn't have many we were talking about that I was on that at the time. No, I wasn't at that point, you know, active in coaching on it anyway, so I could stay.
Okay.
I didn't have a problem with that. And Bill Hancock did a terrific job. If you ever see his name, he was the one that was in charge of March Madness during the NCAA days, and he went on over into the leadership of the CFP, did an outstanding job. And we have a new man now, Richard Clark, who was a general and played for me at Air Force. He was a linebacker for us when I played there. I mean, when I coached there, he was a linebacker, and then he's been the academy superintendent for 4 years. He's now leader of the CFP, and I think they did an outstanding job this year, too.
I was talking to Hunter the other day, and somebody said, you know, and he said, it's not my fault that SMU got in because I couldn't talk about him. So he said, don't blame me. Do you think they got it right putting SMU in over Alabama for that last spot?
I don't know. I didn't see the evaluations and really what they're talking about right now. But I think anybody that's earned their way, the biggest thing you want to do is see people earn their way in. And the only thing considering on a record was your strength of schedule. I know we had the problem when I was there with Florida State, and Florida State had a great year 1 year, and then right after the season was over, they lose their quarterback, and know he wasn't going to be playing in the ball game. And that caused a lot of talk and discussion of where they should be placed without him. Are they the same team or are they not? And so you do have decisions that came up. You had to make a decision on and live with.
You know, like one of the talking points was, should SMU be penalized for playing a 13th game when some of the other teams that were being considered for that, they didn't have to play that 13th game? I just wonder, if you were sitting in the committee room, what would your thought have been on that?
I'd watch the whole team no matter what. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they got they may have had some players out, they may have some injuries, they may have gotten totally embarrassed, you know, in the ball game. So they do have another opportunity right there, and I always consider all the information we had, I would have considered it too.
So your football team, the 1964 team, you guys got back together for a 60-year reunion the Texas weekend, I think, back in November. What was that like? And
well,
and
first
seeing
of all, you
teammates?
Had to count and see who was still alive. It was a great affair, a great moment. The 64 team was unique in a lot of ways, and anybody that followed and saw it because of the 63 year. 62, we went 9-1, thought we were going to have a good year in 63. We had a lot of injuries. We end up 5-5. You know, even that year, the last game of the year, right on Friday, President Kennedy was assassinated, and we played Texas Tech, beat them, and that started 22 straight for Arkansas during that time. But I think we always had in 64 the nagging feeling of what had happened in 63. And I think that stayed with us the whole year. But one of the greatest things that happened for you athletes or anybody happened when we played Texas that year. In 64, Texas was the national champion in 63. They had won 19 straight games, and we were playing them in Austin, Texas. And we beat them in the ball game, which was a big moment, a big game for us to win. But we're in the locker room, if you can imagine, celebrating. And right in the middle of celebration, the door opens and in walks Darrell Royal. He's the head football coach for the University of Texas Longhorns. Well, you could hear a pin drop. We all sit there and think, is he lost? Does he know where he is? But I remember Coach Royal went over and he said, congratulations, team, like I'm saying to you. He said, you beat a great Texas team. We are not ordinary. This team will not lose another game this year. If you don't stick to your knitting every day, every game, and you falter, we'll pick up the pieces. We went on the last five games. We shut out the last five opponents. Nobody scored a point. And then we go in the Cotton Bowl that year in the afternoon. We're down, and Freddie Marshall – and our offense take the ball, 80-yard drive late in the fourth quarter to win the ball game. When the game is over, the only time ever, all the Arkansas team, we gathered in the motels in front of the TV and pulled for Texas against Alabama and Joe Namath. And it came down 21-17. The ball is on the half-yard line. Alabama's got to score to win the ball game. They're undefeated. Field goal won't help them. The last play of the game, a quarterback named Joe Namath that may have heard about, takes the ball, tries to push the ball across the goal line, and Tommy Nobis, the great All-American linebacker from Texas, hits him in midair about that far away from the goal line and knocks him short. And with that play, we win the national championship. Without it, we probably would not have won it. That's how close it was, but that's how moments from Darrell Royal and what he said to us to motivate you to keep going all the time, those are very special moments that all played into right things happen. We would never have won the national championship if Alabama had played some other team other than Texas. But because we had beat Texas and they turned around and beat Alabama, that allowed us to win the national championship. So just remember this. You got a lot of plans, but God's got bigger plans than that. Just relax and do what you're supposed to do, and God will take care of the rest of it. All right. Yep.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Hey, we appreciate you being with us. We're going to be back with one more podcast on Monday. Then we'll take a couple of days off as we celebrate Christmas and head over to Memphis. We'll have a podcast for you from Memphis at the end of next week. So we hope we see you Monday. And if we don't see you again until Christmas, have a Merry Christmas, everyone.